This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia. Today, Samoa's unprecedented door-to-door vaccination campaign continues today as authorities take action too against those who were spreading anti-vaccination messages, with one man charged. We'll hear from our reporter on the ground in Apia shortly, and we'll cross to Bougainville as well, as the final preparations are underway for counting to begin this weekend of the votes that were cast in the region's historic independence referendum. And also, could ancient Pacific traditions hold the key to tackling the impacts of climate change in the Pacific?
Artificial islands is a really good example, because people have been doing this for a long time in Solomons and in Micronesia and all over the place, really.
We are a sleeping giant. We have so much richness. Most of the Pacific island nations are built on indigenous values, on their indigenous peoples.
Some of the people hoping that may be the case are attending this week's Global Climate Talks, the COP25 in Spain. We're going to bring you more on that story and more coming up here on Pacific Beach. Good morning, I'm Catherine Grau. Well, the countrywide shutdown in Samoa is continuing today as the government there steps up its mass vaccination campaign in the wake of the ongoing measles state of emergency that has now led to at least 62 deaths. Meanwhile, the government is also fighting the anti-vaccination movement, with a senior minister laying the blame for much of the fear that exists about vaccines in Samoa with social media users, most, he says, who are overseas. But police in Samoa have now charged a prominent local anti-vaccination activist under the country's state of emergency orders. Edwin Tomase Sese has been a vocal critic of the clinical treatments during Samoa's current measles epidemic, and it's advocated for vitamins A or D as alternative treatments. He's been refused bail to appear in court at a later date. Now, the communication minister and the government spokesman, Afamasanga Rico Tupoi, says the work of anti-vaxxers is hampering their efforts to have everyone immunised.
Unfortunately, that's what is slowing the work of government down. And that's another major reason now to the increasing number of deaths, because a lot of people are keeping their people at home and keeping the children at home. And the last result is when they see there's nothing else and then they rush to hospital. Some die on the road or some just arrive and it's nothing can be done about it. So the law is coming down, cracking down on those that are delaying the treatment of the children. Unfortunately, these anti-vax people all live overseas, but they're using social media to influence the community and influence our population. What can government do? We are not wasting time on those people.
Samoan government spokesman Afamasanga Rico Tupai there. Well, meanwhile, the UN Children's Agency UNICEF too is hitting out against anti-vaxxers, with the Pacific representative Sheldon Yet calling for social media companies, in fact, to crack down on those using their sites. Meanwhile, the Samoan Prime Minister Tuilepa Salele has come under fire from international media covering the crisis and over the way that his government has handled it, as Liam Fox reports.
It was a testy press conference with both local and international reporters, and Samoa's Prime Minister Tuilepa Salele rejected claims he's been blaming his own people for the crisis because they had not got their children vaccinated.
You're wrong. We were not blaming. We were educating them.
No, you blame them.
No. You're wrong. We were trying to, you see, understanding the problem is a big thing.
He appeared to suggest he sympathises with those turning to local traditional healers.
You do not know because you are not a Samoan. But with Samoans, and I have been a beneficiary of our protection from traditional medicines to cover tropical diseases.
But the PM is now urging his people to get vaccinated. Cases first started surfacing in September. It wasn't until October that the government announced an epidemic, and a few weeks later a state of emergency was declared. Things have gone from bad to worse since then. Dr. Graham Jay has been part of the Australian medical team helping local health workers.
Measles is a devastating disease. I saw it impact families. I saw parents lose their children. Some families lost more than one child, and so the impact is absolutely devastating.
the streets of Samoa's capital Apia were deserted as the government ordered businesses to shut their doors and banned cars from the roads. Red flags, from lace to the local skirt, the Lava Lava, fluttered in the wind outside homes to indicate to mobile vaccination units that someone inside needed to be vaccinated. The mass vaccination campaign continues, and Prime Minister Tuilaepa is confident it'll help authorities finally get the upper hand.
We have done what we are expected to do and what we should do.
But when asked by a British journalist why the mass vaccination program wasn't started months ago, the Prime Minister tried to change the subject.
You came from where?
From London, England.
From London, England.
Yes, sir.
What have you written about Brexit? Before you talk about our problem, talk about your own problem. The next question.
Next question.
Health experts say Samoa's immunisation rates have been low for some time, but the problem was compounded when the country's measles vaccination program was suspended for 8 months last year. That followed the deaths of two babies after they were given incorrectly mixed doses of the MMR vaccine. Punipuao and Siu Timua's son Lameko was one of those to die. They spoke with Radio New Zealand this week through a translator.
The baby was shaking and turned yellowish, even the eyes, the whole face. But it wasn't long. It wasn't for long.
And then what did you do?
So she went back. She screamed and went back to inside the hospital and they tried to bring him back, but he was gone.
They're now suing the country's health ministry, and they're critical of the government's decision to suspend vaccinations, which they blame for the current outbreak. But the Prime Minister's defended it, and he says there's a silver lining.
The lesson is that we are more conscious now. Our people are more conscious that by coming and have your children vaccinated is the only way.
That is Samoa's Prime Minister Tuilaepa Salele speaking with media yesterday. The reporter there for us, Liam Fox. Well, health workers and support teams are now very much well into day two of the mass mobile vaccination drive, with teams going door to door and using loudspeakers to let those inside their homes know that they have arrived. Sounds of one of the mobile units, part of that mass mobile vaccination drive. Now, our reporter Melissa Clark is in Apia. I spoke with her a short time ago to get a sense of the situation on the ground today.
It's actually very quiet. I'm in some villages along the coastlines, and we have seen some vaccination teams going from door to door, but with the curfew in place, everyone ordered to stay in their homes. It means the streets are empty, shops are closed. Normal life has certainly ground to a halt. There's very little traffic on the roads other than the vaccination teams. A few tourism-related cars are allowed on the roads, and of course there are some police that we've seen enforcing the rules as well. So it's certainly a very different day from normal life in Samoa. We are still seeing some red flags around, so clearly there is still work for the vaccination teams to do. They're also putting up green tick stickers for the houses that have had vaccinations yesterday and today to make it easier to double check who needs vaccination and who has already been taken care of. The numbers we're hearing from officials suggest there's still a long way to go to get to the government's stated aim of getting 90% of the population vaccinated. So the teams that are on the ground today here will be very busy indeed.
That is our reporter Melissa Clark, who's in Apia there. Well, Samoa's measles emergency is also directly impacting even the country's rugby sevens team, with players' own children among those to contract the disease. Now, the Manu Sevens dedicated their win overnight in what was their opening match of the new World Series in Dubai to the families who've lost children to measles back home. Players wore black armbands in the match against Canada, which they did win 19-12. The captain, Tomasi Aloisio, had a message for the people of Samoa after the game.
Just finished our first game of the World Series here in Dubai against Canada. We always knew it was going to be a tough one, with it being the first game, and the first game is always the toughest of any tournament, and it's good to come out on top. And Samoa, this is for you. We dedicate this weekend to for the families of the victims of the measles. And our hearts and prayers go out to you guys. The Manu Samoa Sevens here in Dubai are going to do it for you. Cheers, Samoa.
That is the Manu Sevens captain Tomasi Aloisio there from Dubai. Now, in the lead up to this tournament, their coach, Sir Gordon Titchens, had indeed said that more than ever the Samoan team would be playing for the people at home, as Richard Hewitt reports.
A new World Sevens season, Hans Gordon Titchens says, is a new-look Samoa lineup looking to return the team to the dizzy heights of 2010 when the Manu won the World Series.
It's a big tournament for us because we need a good start. And there's three new debutants in terms of Lossie Filippo, Kelvin Marcelli and Tuna Tuitama. You know, three new young boys that have come to the Samoan team. And so it's exciting. I'm really excited for them having their very first tournament, but also for the experienced players that are coming back and perform so well for us in the past.
But sadly, the one player absent from the Samoan side, Leloi Lalua, has returned home to be with his wife and month-old daughter after the baby contracted measles.
The guys I know will be going out to play for him. There's a lot of feeling within the team. We're going to be playing for each other and playing for the country. And I can assure you that the guys will be giving it 200% to do Samoa proud. And I know what the jersey really means to them.
The measles crisis has also had an impact on Fiji, with all sporting events back in the islands being cancelled as a precaution. But the men's and women's sevens teams are safely in Dubai, with the women looking to improve on a dismal showing in the USA last month, while the men set out in the defence of their world title.
It's Richard Hewitt reporting there.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, anticipation continues to grow in Bougainville ahead of the counting of votes that will begin this weekend in the region's historic referendum on possible independence from PNG. Referendum officials have been praising voters as well as their own polling staff and volunteers for what has been mostly a very smooth process. The result is expected within the next week, but as we've reported here previously on Pacific Beat, it is non-binding and so will just be the start of yet another process of negotiations to happen between the Bougainville and PNG governments. Our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting is in Arawa in Bougainville, and I spoke with her a short time ago. Give us a sense, if you can, what it's like there on the ground. This referendum, of course, is such a long time coming as part of that peace agreement secured nearly 20 years ago. But then now we've had voting take 2 weeks and at least another week of counting. Certainly it's drawn out. How are people feeling?
Everyone I've met is still excited and hopeful about the path ahead. And as you say, it is quite a long process, but that certainly doesn't seem to have worried Bougainvillians. Everyone still seems now as in good mood and high spirits now as they were when voting started.
And obviously voting, as we've said, has completed. In fact, it finished a bit earlier than officials had expected, or at least allowed time for. It ran so smoothly compared to perhaps in contrast to other elections we see in PNG, an indication of just how important this referendum has been.
Yes, I think so. There was obviously, a lot of willingness to get there and vote early. The Bougainville Referendum Commission was telling us how many people turned up to vote early. People were clearly keen to take part, as everyone expected. There was also a lot of polling booths. So they had more than 800. They really went out to a lot of locations, out into villages, to make sure they reached everyone. But as you say, voting was originally meant to continue throughout this week, but they said that they have reached people and they were concerned about people were getting ink on their fingers to show they'd already voted. They were concerned about ink wearing off and the possibility that created of people trying to vote for a second time. So they felt everyone had voted, but they weren't getting people turning up to the remaining booths. So they said, we'll finish up, we'll bring the ballot boxes in so that we can get ready for counting.
And counting does begin this weekend, I understand, from around 6 o'clock tomorrow night. They're still receiving postal votes, though, coming from other places in PNG and here in Australia and Solomon Islands.
Yes, postal votes. So most of the ballot boxes almost all of the ballot boxes are now in Booker. The last votes to be received will be those postal votes, which will be coming in still on Saturday. So the process from the weekend will be getting all of those ballots, verifying them and mixing them. So we're going to make sure all of the votes get in and get mixed up so that there's no way of telling which areas voted in which way or any way to sort of discriminate as to where people placed their votes. So the scrutinising and mixing we're expecting to take place over the weekend, with counting proper to start on Monday.
It is our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting there in Arawa in Bougainville. Well, there are calls on Manus Island for authorities to step in and resolve differences that have arisen between local landowners and police there that centre around the future of the former Australian-funded asylum seeker accommodation on the island. This week, gunshots were fired and a scuffle broke out as police tried to enforce a court order to clear landowners who'd been protesting at the site. Now, that centre had previously been run by the controversial Australian by a controversial Australian company until its multi-million dollar contract ended last month. The group of landowners say that the company they own was then bypassed as a new contract was given to another security company, as Evan Wasuka explains.
The island of Manus in Papua New Guinea used to be home to Australia's offshore regional processing centre for asylum seekers. In November, the last of its detainees were moved to Port Moresby, and the contract for its operation, which was looked after by Australian company Paladin, ended. Manus landowners were expecting their company, Parent Investment, to take on the contract to secure the site. Paul Timby is a business consultant for Parent.
Parent has been involved in the past 7 years or 6 years with Broad Spectrum, with Paladin, Transfield, providing support services to the asylum seekers.
The contract was instead awarded to PNG company Tassion. On Tuesday, police moved in to enforce a court order from Tassion by clearing the asylum centre when violence broke out. Benjamin Pokarup, a Manus resident, says he was on the scene soon after gunshots started. Mr. Pokarup runs Maus Manus Development Forum, a community group.
In a quiet place, in a very peaceful place like Manus, this gunshot was absolutely unnecessary because there was no protesters.
Provincial Police Commander David Yapu were among those reportedly assaulted, according to reports in the Post Courier newspaper. But Mr. Pokarup says it's the landowners who were hard done by.
There were only eight landowners with their team leader, Kepo Pomat, who was there at the gate when the gunshots went off the air.
Paul Timby from Piran says police did not communicate clearly with landowners.
The National Court Order wasn't served up until there's a violence and problem, then they served the court order after that.
The Minister for Immigration, Wesley Nukunj, who's responsible for the facility, told Parliament that police action in Manus would be investigated.
First, I apologise if the presence of police caused any problems. The engagement of police is not clear, but I will find out what they were doing to protect the site.
But it's unlikely that the uncertainty on Manus will end soon, with leaked documents provided to the ABC showing a ministerial directive dated 28th of November instructing PNG's chief immigration officer to terminate Tassion's contract. Pacific Beat has sought comments from PNG's Chief Immigration Officer, Solomon Kantha. Benjamin Pokarup from the Maus Manus Development Forum says authorities need to intervene to settle differences between police and landowners, and more importantly, the contract for the former processing centre.
We want to see the peace and harmony reigns in between the two parties and the members of the general public. And the people of Manus at large.
Pacific Beat has also sought comments from Australia's Department of Home Affairs for this story.
There's our reporter Evan Wasuka reporting there. Could ancient Pacific traditions hold the key to tackling the impacts of climate change? That is one of the many questions that are being posed at the climate talks, the COP25 in Spain this week, where Indigenous leaders from right around the world are pushing for their voices to also be heard at what is a very crucial meeting. They hope that governments will be able to take steps to better protect their communities from climate change. And as Priyanka Srinivasan reports, they say that unless action is taken now, their traditions and cultures could be lost forever.
Stanley Waita says his ancestors built their village of Wolande in the Solomon Islands hundreds of years ago. They piled up rocks and coral on a reef to form an island they could live on. It was a form of indigenous engineering, Mr. Waita says, helped his once nomadic family survive for generations.
It is built by people who travel from one place to another, and we are to stay in the sea, which we built the artificial island. So it is built century ago by our great-great-grandfathers.
But today, his man-made home island is mostly empty. Eroded by rising sea levels and powerful waves, he says climate change has made Wolande difficult to live.
We don't have that anymore. We don't see the artificial island anymore, but we are really sorry and we feel that we should have it and we should keep it.
But as extreme weather events are causing some indigenous communities to abandon their homes, there are now calls for governments to embrace ancient techniques, from building artificial islands like Wolande to using indigenous knowledge of weather patterns and agriculture to provide more sustainable responses to climate change.
This knowledge, I think, should be incorporated into current plans for dealing with climate change.
Jennifer Bryant Tokelau is from the School of Geography at Otago University in New Zealand. As world leaders meet this week in Madrid at the United Nations COP25 Climate Summit, she says governments should pay more attention to indigenous strategies.
These sorts of meetings have been going on for a long time. Often indigenous approaches were just sidelined.
And that, she argues, can mean far-flung, expensive ideas are often favoured over the indigenous solutions that already exist, but just need more modern expertise to survive the impact of climate change. For example, the Kiribati government has enlisted a Japanese firm to design a high-tech floating island to help it deal with rising sea levels. And a US company has approached French Polynesia to build a series of artificial islands off the coast of Tahiti, though these plans were eventually rejected by the government. For Ms. Brian Tokelau, these ideas aren't necessary.
Artificial islands is a really good example because people have been doing this for a long time in Solomons and in Micronesia and all over the place, really. But then suddenly a donor will come in, Japan or one of the other big donors, with a brilliant new idea for artificial islands tethered to the seabed. But they're inappropriate.
But things might be changing. Ghazali Oharela from the Maluku Islands off the coast of West Papua in Indonesia is representing Pacific indigenous communities at this year's COP meeting. He's optimistic about what they can offer to these climate talks.
We are a sleeping giant. We have so much richness. Most of the Pacific island nations are built on indigenous values, on their indigenous peoples.
His aim is for governments and climate scientists to partner with indigenous communities in tackling global warming.
We have a very strong voice within these climate walls. In terms of climate change, we are not victims, we are actually fighting.
Back in Solomon Islands, Stanley Waita is encouraged by news that his traditional knowledge may be used in the global fight against climate change, but says his community needs more support to build the islands again.
We can build it if we got some help from somewhere. It's a good thing going back into what we did in the past.
Stanley Waita is from the Solomon Islands, and that report there from Priyanka Srinivasan. Well, that is all for Pacific Beat this morning from me. Of course, we are on air in the afternoons as well. That's from 3 p.m. PNG time. Do stay tuned, of course, to ABC Radio Australia because there's Pacific Mornings continuing up next with Talia Olatia. I'll be back same time Monday morning for what will be a very big week. We will bring you the very latest from Samoa on the measles crisis with our reporter there on the ground. And of course, all eyes are on Bougainville as counting will be underway next week and we should have a result. So stay tuned to Pacific Beat next week. Until then, I'm Catherine Grau. Have a great weekend.